This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Between the Keys with Jed Distler is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is provided in part by listener members like you. Welcome again to Between the Keys. And with me today is Lisa Yui.
Hello, Jed.
Hello, Lisa. She is a highly distinctive pianist, a lecturer, an educator, and the founder of New York's long-running concert series, The Lives at the Piano. Welcome to Between the Keys.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Lisa, you know, I've had this obsession. Well, Frédéric Chopin's second piano sonata probably is best known for its third movement,
yes.
The famous Funeral March. But the fourth and final movement of this piece comes as a total surprise. It's a little more than 1 minute long. It's one of the strangest and most extraordinary things that Chopin ever wrote. It sounds like this. Not only have I been obsessed with this little movement ever since I was a kid, but I've also been fascinated by, even baffled by, just how differently many pianists approach this music. There seems to be an unusually wide interpretive margin from one pianist to another. And because of that, and because it's a very short piece, I thought we could compare a bunch of interpretations. Sometimes I'm going to say who's playing beforehand, and sometimes I won't. How's that sound to you, Lisa?
It sounds like a lot of fun.
We're going to play two versions, and what I will say is that these pianists come from the same country. Thank you.
Wow, two completely different performances.
Completely different performances. I will give you a hint that both pianists are Canadian.
Canadian?
Yes.
Interesting. The second
that,
one...
That narrows it down
it really
to about
does,
six.
Doesn't it? I mean,
no,
I'm mean,
teasing
yes.
it now.
The second one is sicker. There's an unhealthy aspect to it, and the last chords are, you know, it really is enough to, you know, jump out of your seat. The first one, I mean, certainly it's drier. He maintains dryness. I mean, Chopin described this movement as chattering. The left hand chatters in unison, and I think the first one really captures that. The second one has more. I mean, he uses more pedal. There's more variety in touch.
You're
but
assuming
I really,
it's he.
Oh, actually, you're right. That's
actually, you are right in this.
Am
case.
I right?
Yes.
But the second one is it has a diseased quality that I really really like.
In some instances, there's some portions that seem underplayed, but the mm-hmm. underplaying seems deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and he maintains the volume actually for the most part at a very low level, and that builds the tension much better, I think.
Well, I'll tell you, the first pianist was Janina Fielkowska. The second pianist is Marc-André
Hamelin. Yes.
The next two pianists, what I will say is that these pianists had a career-long rivalry and not always a friendly rivalry. Here's the first one.
I think there's we're starting to notice certain characteristics or, you know, habits that pianists have. Certain pianists play this entire movement straight and almost flat, whereas other pianists really make clear the phrases. I mean, it's pretty much a two-bar phrase for the entire movement. And I think the second pianist really is careful to show the phrasings and the beginnings and the ends of a phrase.
I think so. That's my sense of it. It has more of a melodic trajectory than the mm-hmm. first one, which as we were listening, we thought it was a little more etude. Like, we didn't think that these had quite the strong points of view of the first two that we heard. Well, I did say that these pianists had a strong and not always friendly rivalry. Mm-hmm. Hmm. The first one was Vladimir Horowitz, and the second one was Arthur Rubinstein.
Interesting. So the first one is Horowitz.
Correct.
Yes, that's very interesting. I mean, the second one is certainly, well,
studio recordings.
I seem to be distinguishing between healthy and unhealthy performances. I mean, it's not that simple, but the second one seems extremely healthy to me and very nuanced and phrased well. And the first one does have this more of a slightly gnomish quality. But as you say, the Horowitz performance was to me a little flat. For Horowitz, it was a little dry.
There are live performances with mm-hmm. him
that are very different.
For uh-huh. instance, why don't we play a little bit of this live mm-hmm. one from Carnegie Hall? Still very etude-like.
It is, but it has more of a gnomish quality than the first
the studio three, one.
Yeah, the first version that we heard. What
yeah,
do you think?
I think probably in front of an audience he let go more, as mm-hmm. did Arthur Rubinstein, actually.
Oh, certainly. Different.
It's totally different. I think it's a lot freer.
Absolutely. And there's a kind of a sensuality that we didn't hear
in his studio,
and certainly not in Horowitz's either. And it really comes to show what an important ingredient live audience was for these two pianists.
Now, here are two pianists who I think occupy a very similar aesthetic. They're both Russian pianists.
Thank you. Well, they certainly are fast.
They are fast.
Oh, my goodness. Is it necessary to be this fast? And what does it do?
I think, why do they play this fast? Either there are two answers. One is because they can, mm-hmm. and two is because they can't play any faster.
But I think in a way, this movement is more difficult, a little slower, because it forces you to play clearly. And in some ways, it's easier to fake certain passages, like the scale. I think there's a tradition of playing the sweeping scales with some pedal and a certain amount of muddiness as
yes,
well,
yes,
which
yes.
is impressive, but I think pianists will know that it's actually more difficult to play each note clearly.
Well, we got some mud coming up in a little while.
Oh, so, more mud?
So for those of you who are tired of all this clarity, stick around because we got some muddy versions.
How
close. I'll tell you, what I said that these are two Russian pianists, mm-hmm. and I feel like the aesthetic is the same, but what I felt was that the second pianist had a little bit more substance, because even though it was very fast and on the same level, it seemed to have more shape and
I agree.
And more finesse.
I agree.
In its way. The first one was Andrei Gavrilov.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend who once called him a BMW without the driver.
I think this is a great example of that.
Yeah, because the fingers sometimes outrun the brains in that version. The second one was Emil Gilels.
Gilels, interesting.
Gilels, yes. Huh. Is it Gilels or Gilels?
Oh, you're asking a Japanese-Canadian this question.
Well, you should know the answer.
Gilels, I believe.
I think it's Gilels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very impressive.
It's very pianistically oriented, mm-hmm. but it is in such a... Shall we go on?
Let's go on.
Now, I've put these two pianists together because they begin the movement slowly and then they work their way up to tempo. Here is the first one. Thank you.
What an interesting pairing. The second one I recognized.
Yes.
It's a famous recording.
Yes, Ivo Pogorelich.
Pogorelich. I think they're both really strong performances. The Pogorelich I've always liked. He warms up into this movement, and when the main theme returns later on, that's the peak, right? He builds up right to there, and then the rest of the movement, he kind of fades away, and it's just one sweep.
The deliberate beginning arises from the previous movement. So mm-hmm, it really mm-hmm. isn't fair that we're listening to all of these recorded versions of the finale of the Chopin B-flat minor sonata mm-hmm. out of context, because how this movement emerges from the long and protracted funeral march.
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with it. And Pogorelich actually does that, where the two movements work together. What did you think of the first performance? That was actually Hélène Grimaud.
It was really, really wonderful. It was more subtle, perhaps, than the
Pogorelich.
But the same idea of this kind of like a machine that's warming up into this kind of this mad frenzy of the movement, I think that idea was similar to Pogorelich as well.
Here is another pair of recordings of the finale of the B-flat minor sonata of Chopin. These are two performances by the same pianist.
Incredible.
And as we were listening, you actually identified the first one. It was Maurizio Pollini.
I recognize, first of all, the amazing clarity and the phrasings. He makes the phrasings. I mean, I can't think immediately of another performance of this final movement where a pianist so beautifully makes so clear the phrasings of a new passage, and so elegantly as he does in this first
recording.
And he's
doing it with very, very little tempo fluctuation, whereas in some of the other performances, there's more tempo fluctuation to demarcate the phrasing.
Yes. I can't believe this is the same pianist. The second one uses much more pedal. There's a certain... dare I say, you know, the word sloppy and Pollini, they usually are never, ever together. But
it's a little more casual.
It's a little more casual, yes. You would kind of think that when it's slightly blurrier, like it is in the second performance, that it would be more exciting or it would be more murky. But I find the first one more exciting and tighter.
The first one is Pollini from 1985. The second is his remake, which is also a studio recording. I believe it's a studio recording from 2008.
Fascinating.
Now, we were talking about pedal and murky and muddy before, and that was my big teaser earlier on. We've been leading up to it, and we're going to hear three versions. Which
murky ones?
We're going to hear a murky trio of finales
oh,
from the Chopin B-flat minor sonata. Here we go. There's some pianists who stretch out the last chord, yes, and I feel like it's as subtle as an anvil falling on your head. But we have three versions that use an awful lot of pedal, yet they're mm-hmm. very different. And you did recognize the first one.
The first one is Martha Argerich. It caused quite a sensation when it came out. And it's still a fantastic performance. There's certainly a sheen of pedal running through the entire movement, but you can actually hear every single note still underneath the kind of the haze. And the last performance, for example, there was a great deal of crescendo and diminuendo, but Argerich is much more restrained. And she never really goes beyond a certain volume. And I think that level of control makes it very exciting.
Yes, because it doesn't build too much too soon. The third one is almost rhapsodic.
It is, isn't it?
The third one was Yevgeny Kissin.
Oh, I see.
The second one was Garrick Olson. Which I think is very moody and brooding.
Murky, yes. Stormy.
But it doesn't quite match the profile of the other ones. I've heard him play it very excitingly in concert.
I find it also interesting the way Argerich creates this big crescendo right before the final chords, which is not written on the score, but I think it's quite effective the way she does it.
Because she's reining everything in first.
And, that's right.
And she's that's able right. to do that without telegraphing the end, which is
it feels like an unleashing for the first time.
Okay. Here's one version of a pianist who I know that you know, Lisa. That was Byron Janis in the finale of the Chopin B-flat minor sonata.
My teacher.
Your teacher. I thought I would sneak your teacher in. I really love that performance.
It is wonderful. It's interesting. It has kind of elements of Horowitz and Rachmaninoff, I was thinking, you know, and which is kind of the right genealogy.
He does that pause before the final chords, which drives me out of my gourd. But that was something that many pianists did. That was kind of a tradition.
It was. I think in this case, it was quite tastefully
yes.
done. And it could be very vulgar when it's done exceedingly, I think.
Here are two versions, and I think what they have in common is that these versions are very, very fast. Thank you. very, very fast, yet the intentions are different, and the and the level of maturity, to my mind, is very different. The first one was Katya Bunyatishvili, and the second one was Arturo Benedetti Michelangeli. That's quite a mouthful.
Bravo, bravo to you. The time, the tempo seems very similar between the two, and they certainly are very fast, but so different. I think one obvious difference is that with the Michelangeli, you can actually tap time, and it's pretty much on time. Whereas in the first recording, there's an incredible freedom of rhythm and pulse. And I found the first one very interesting. I mean, she brought out some voices that I've never noticed before, and she did some interesting rhythmic things with the hemiolas. But I think if you don't keep strict time, this movement can fall apart.
I think with her, it seems like there are a lot of these little local details and little flights of fancy, but they don't necessarily add up. Whereas Michelangeli certainly has a lot of nuance, yet it's incidental to the structure.
Yes, I love that you paired these two together, because they are superficially so very similar. And yet in the details, we see an enormous difference between the two.
It's just so antsy. It's like she's looking for things to do.
It's interesting that you can tell when someone is simply adding makeup to music and another person actually finds the core of the music itself.
Here are three, let's say, individualistic versions that could not be more different from each other. Actually, I was going to play three together, but we were saying so much that I thought we should stop. That is a pianist, David Wild.
I see. I don't know of him.
I feel like the details are all very interesting, but I feel like he's working too hard to prove his points.
Yes. I'm realizing as we're listening to a massive amount of the same movement that you don't have to add things to it. You don't have to try so hard. In a way, just play what's written, which includes sotto voce, which this performance was not.
This was not sotto voce. It,
well, of course, it's so difficult to play, you know, this in sotto voce, but we have to try.
Well, speaking of working hard to do different things, here's a version that I think falls into that, yet it does so with far less effort.
Thank you. Oh, this is a person with a great sense of humor.
Cyprian Katsaros.
Come on. Yes. It seems so obvious, right? Oh, amazing.
I love his playing because he does have such a sense of humor. All of those little it's almost like the cartoon version of the Chopin sonata.
It seems so wrong, and yet one could only listen to it and say, okay, sure. I've never smiled listening to the final movement of the second sonata.
No, because it's a very serious movement. It's the wind passing over the graveyard.
Right.
I didn't see any graveyard here. There's a lot of wind.
That's right. Impressive wind, too.
It wasn't so much wind over the graveyard as it was twinkle dust over the...
Now, it's really a serious mystery. How can we accept this performance and say, you know, this is really wonderful, and not say that it's vulgar, it's wrong? It's
kind of like Glenn Gould's Mozart.
There's a right, they make it convincing. Right?
They make it convincing because there's no cliche about it.
That's true.
I think that's what it is.
That's interesting, yes.
The performance doesn't have the expressive cliches that you would have, the slowdowns in the expected places, and the speed ups in the expected places, and the louder and softer in the
and
expected
obvious
places.
Technical facility and ability is absolutely apparent in this performance as well.
Here's a performance that's very creative, and in fact, David Dubal played this performance not long ago on The Piano Matters, and I thought, wow. Great radio hosts think alike. And I shouldn't be immodest. Let's listen to this.
Goodness, that's a live performance.
It's a live performance. That's Natan Brand.
Oh, wonderful pianist. Wonderful pianist.
He's a pianist I never really knew very well until I heard this recording.
He has recorded such wonderful things of Schumann, and he's getting a kind of a second life, it seems. And people are, starting to see his name everywhere these days. It's a wonderful thing. He's everywhere on YouTube right now. But this performance it's somewhat similar to the Katsaris in that they're both impish. And certainly, I mean, there are some gnomes dancing around the graves, it seems. But this is, as you were saying, refined and
there's a
highly original.
And a very serious intent behind it.
Yes, the Katsaris was, there's really some naughty humor going on in there, but this it is a serious performance.
This is method acting. yeah the Cyprian Katsaris was like Paul Lynde or Rip Taylor or Gilbert Gottfried, but this one was Marlon Brando.
Great performance. I've never heard anything like this.
It's extraordinary. The whole sonata, in fact, is really worth hearing. Well, I bet you are wondering, Lisa, why haven't you played anything from 78? Where is all the surface noise and the... Yeah, we've been a little too clean so far. So we're going to finish with several very, very old performances.
Very fine performance.
Very refined playing. That was Leopold Godowsky in 1930.
We could kind of tell what kind of great technician he must have been. Very fine pianism.
There's a lot of thought that informs the detail, the inner voices that are very discreet, and how when the main theme comes back the second time, it's a tad more deliberate, but then
yeah, it's very subtle though. Nothing obvious here, but these voices that he brings out even near the beginning is I've never heard those notes brought out.
What a recording. That's Ignaz Friedman,
the master himself. These breaks that he takes in the middle, I mean, somehow they don't seem mannered. He makes these dramatic pauses in the middle of the movement, and he seems to kind of gear up towards another direction.
But he brings it off because not only the technique is absolutely effortless and unambiguously masterful, but the dramatic aspect is internalized mm-hmm. to such a amazing degree in this performance.
Do you notice that these recordings that you've, the older recordings that you've played so far, so many of them have such mastery of their digital facility, and yet it's never in the forefront. We don't really hear that this is just simply an etude or playing very fast and clearly, but there's the drama is the main character. What to make of this? What kind of story to tell? What kind of world to create?
It's really transcending the keyboard.
Yes, well, it should be what technique is for.
Speaking of this kind of transcendent technique, here is our final recording of the Chopin finale of the Sonata Number 2 in B flat minor, Opus 35, the Funeral March. Thank you.
Rocky's still good.
Sergei Rachmaninoff at the piano.
You saved the best for last.
It's a performance that still boggles the mind and rivets the imagination and holds your attention.
I think it's the most amazing, perfect balance of technical perfection, transcendence of technique, and creating this dark, cloudy, almost like a Shakespearean world of Macbeth with all these curses and diseases, and it just boils at the end.
I'm not going to ask you to choose a favorite among these because they're so different and so many of them are distinct. So I think the best way to see which one is the best is if we listen to all of them together and see which one comes out first. Why don't we listen to them all together? Could you imagine 20 contestants at the Van Cliburn competition all playing this piece together on 20 pianos? On your mark, get set.
And the person who finishes first wins, right? I think that's how many jury members feel at a competition.
I think that's how competition should be held. Whoever comes in first wins.
Well, that's amazing.
Lisa Yui, thank you so much for
thank
being
you,
here
Jed.
Today.
It is always so much fun to talk to you, especially today.
Okay. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
My guest has been pianist, lecturer, and educator Lisa Yui, who is both performer and commentator in a new Blu-ray and DVD release from Aurora Classics featuring music by Beethoven. You can find earlier episodes of Between the Keys available as webcasts whenever you want to listen by visiting www.fm.org. This is Jed Disler, artist in residence of the Classical Network, and I look forward to you joining me next week at this time for Between the Keys. This show is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.